of the future. Winston Spencer Churchill, Chartwell, Westerham, Kent, March 1948. Book 1. Milestones to Disaster. 1919 to May the 10th, 1940. Chapter 1. The Follies of the Victors. 1919 to 1929. After the end of the World War of 1914, there was a deep conviction and almost universal hope that peace would reign in the world. This heart's desire of all the peoples could easily have been gained by steadfastness in righteous convictions and by reasonable common sense and prudence. The phrase, "the war to end war," was on every lip, and measures had been taken to turn it into reality. President Wilson, wielding, as was thought, the authority of the United States, had made the conception of a League of Nations dominant in all minds. The Allied armies stood along the Rhine, and their bridgeheads bulged deeply into defeated, disarmed, and hungry Germany. The chiefs of the victor powers debated and disputed the future in Paris. Before them lay the map of Europe, to be redrawn almost as they might resolve. After 52 months of agony and hazards, the Teutonic coalition lay at their mercy, and not one of its four members could offer the slightest resistance to their will. Germany, the head and front of the offence, regarded by all as the prime cause of the catastrophe which had fallen upon the world, was at the mercy, or discretion, of conquerors, themselves reeling from the torment they'd endured. Moreover, this had been a war not of governments, but of peoples. The whole life energy of the greatest nations had been poured out in wrath and slaughter. The war leaders, assembled in Paris in the summer of 1919, had been borne thither upon the strongest and most furious tides that have ever flowed in human history. Gone were the days of the treaties of Utrecht and Vienna, when aristocratic statesmen and diplomats, victor and vanquished alike, met in polite and courtly disputation, and, free from the clatter and babel of democracy, could reshape systems upon the fundamentals of which they were all agreed. The peoples, transported by their sufferings and by the mass teachings with which they'd been inspired, stood around in scores of millions to demand that retribution should be exacted to the full. Woe betide the leaders now perched on their dizzy pinnacles of triumph if they cast away at the conference table what the soldiers had won on 100 blood-soaked battlefields. France, by right alike of her efforts and her losses, held the leading place. Nearly 1.5 million Frenchmen had perished defending the soil of France on which they stood against the invader. 5 times in 100 years, in 1814, 1815, 1870, 1914 and 1918, had the towers of Notre Dame seen the flash of Prussian guns and heard the thunder of their cannonade. Now, for 4 horrible years, 13 provinces of France had lain in the rigorous grip of Prussian military rule. Wide regions had been systematically devastated by the enemy or pulverized in the encounter of the armies. There was hardly a cottage or a family from Verdun to Toulon that did not mourn its dead or shelter its cripples. To those Frenchmen, and there were many in high authority, who'd fought and suffered in 1870, it seemed almost a miracle that France should have emerged victorious from the incomparably more terrible struggle which had just ended. All their lives they dwelt in fear of the German Empire. They remembered the preventive war which Bismarck had sought to wage in 1875. They remembered the brutal threat which had driven Delcasse from office in 1905. They'd quaked at the Moroccan menace in 1906, at the Bosnian dispute of 1908, and at the Agadir crisis of 1911. The Kaiser's mailed fist and shining armour speeches might be received with ridicule in England and America. They sounded a knell of horrible reality in the hearts of the French. For 50 years almost, they'd lived under the terror of the German arms. Now, at the price of their lifeblood, the long oppression had been rolled away. Surely, here at last was peace and safety. With one passionate spasm, the French people cried,